Hi, Lynette and Maria. This is Megan. And I just wanted to say how much I enjoy all the podcasts. I really learned a lot from the Spell podcast. And April Activities was really great. The theater dinner and the music were really nice. Well, I just wanted to give you a quick comment. I've enjoyed all the podcasts, and I'm looking forward to the next Moon Slice of Life. Take care.
Hi, Lynette. This is Doug Strobel from Maryland. Just calling to comment on some of your podcasts. I listened to the Microsoft Excel one and learned a lot, as well as your April activity. It was very good podcast. I don't know what I would have done if somebody would have walked up to me in the street, you know, grabbing me, asking to borrow my phone and stuff. So, anyway, that's all I really wanted to say. You did a good job on the podcast. I heard your plea for comments and figured I would respond with one. Also, I just wondered, in your Toddy podcast, about the organizer, it had mentioned Avenue Q and Wicked, and those are two of my favorite shows. So, anyway, talk with you later. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hello, Lynette, Tatum, and Maria. Wait, hold on. Oh, Rios. There we go. This is Jason, and I wanted to call and let you know how much I enjoy hearing both of you on the BCT podcast. I mean, it's your podcast, but it's rebroadcast on the BCT. But anyway, I most recently heard the Cookcast, and it was very funny. Both of you have a very captivating, the right word, good-natured bickering thing going on, and it's quite funny. So I enjoyed listening to that. And just so you have an idea of where I'm calling from, because sometimes it's kind of cool to know those things, I'm not very far from you. I'm in West Hartford, Connecticut. So one of these days, I will get around to recording my space. Oh, boy, nightmare. And anyway, I hope you both are well, and perhaps I'll catch you down the pike. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Hi, guys. It's Beth, BCT Land. Really enjoyed your Lynette space recording. You guys cracked me up. I loved it. And I am trying to solve the problem of underuse by BCT guys of your comment line. So, hey, chalk one up. Also, I enjoyed your BCT Freedom Box podcast. And I wonder if you could do a follow-up at some point, because you said that you were going to get Freedom Box. So I would love to know if you did and how you like it. This is Beth from warm Newport News, Virginia. It's about 80-some-odd degrees today. Sunny, rain in the forecast for tomorrow. Oh, also, on a more serious note, if you could at some point do a podcast on if you were home when 9/11 occurred, and if so, what was your experience of it? Because, you know, how near were you to it, and what did you hear, what did you see? Okay, that's it from me for now. Toodaloo!
This is the Malin Slice of Life podcast for Sunday, April 7th, 2006. Today, I am suffering, if you will, from an allergy that just started about an hour ago. So please forgive throat clearing, sneezing, sniffling, coffee, stuffy head. Oh, no, okay, that's the commercial. Anyway, I just wanted to reply is respond and reply. But before I do, you won't have to suffer through my hacking and wheezing just yet. I'm going to put Maria on, and she would like to reply to some comments, and some email, rather, that she got concerning her Quick Cook cast.
Hi, all. I heard something beep. I don't know if that. This is Maria, and I just wanted to say thank you very, very much to those of you who listened to and responded to our cooking cast. It was something Lynette had wanted me to do for quite a while, and I finally one day just got up and said, well, let me take along my digital recorder with me, my 320M, and that's the kind of person I am. I have to sort of do it on the spur of the moment. So just to mention a few people, Mary Emerson, Hope Povenmire, Lynette is coaching in the background. Tiffany Black, Jason, I'm sorry, I don't know your last name. We got your message, but I didn't get your, you didn't say your last name.
Unless it's
cast. There was someone else. Oh, Caroline Ford. You know, truly appreciate it. We love to make people laugh, and actually,
and
we just do it. I mean, it just comes out that way. Most of the time, we don't set out to, you know, to be funny. It just happens. So I thank you once again for all your kind words, and hopefully, I will, you know, get the urge to do another such cast. If you care to email me, my email address is Malyn 80, that's M-A-L-Y-N 87 at earthlink.net. Over and out.
Now, folks, I'm going to pause at this moment. I will be coming back with comments of my own. And then we will start on a serious note. I am going to get some drugs. And by that, I mean I'm going to our local store to pick up something for this allergy. Otherwise, I fear I will not get through this alive. Okay. Okay. I am back. And, hopefully in one piece. I have to make a correction. I think I listened back to the recording I made before we went to the store, and I sounded as if I said coffee instead of coughing. So, in any case, I am now on Tylenol allergy over-the-counter something. So, let's hope that works, at least for the duration of this podcast. I wanted to make some, to reply to some of the comments made in the comments. And I'm so glad that everyone enjoyed the Excel cast. I am no mathematician. I made a mistake, actually. I called it a whole number when I was talking about the fractions. I meant to say a mixed number. But I can at least show you how to get around Excel. In an introductory fashion. April activities, as you know, came along a week before the month was actually up. But that was a good thing because you'll actually hear one of the last activities we did in April today. And I'm glad folks enjoyed that. It's my pleasure to put it together. And I always look back and say, oh, well, I forgot, and, oh, well, anyway. Doug, Avenue Q, and Wicked are still two of our favorite shows that we want to see, and we will. And for anyone who cares, I understand that Wicked has descriptions now. I believe you leave your credit card at the box office, and they provide some sort of listening device. In any case, I'm ready. Another show I'd like to mention is Bridges and Tunnels with Sarah Jones. Sarah Jones is a fantastic actress who plays many characters. I do believe not all from New York, but characters from her experience. And it's a wonderful show, and it's truly authentic. And if you're in New York, I'd try to catch the show. I certainly am going to try to catch, get some tickets for the next 2 weeks, actually. We'll see how that goes. Our space cast, we have enjoyed the space casts. They have been wonderful. And it was indeed coincidental that Larry Riz and I put up the space casts on the same day. And there has been a veritable flood ever since. And it's been marvelous. We've really gotten to know, people's, environment. And it's been terrific. As Larry likes to say, BCT is not just for technology. And as someone else said, BCT is kind of like a community now. So even though I have my own podcast, I still try to post things that I think will be fun educational, entertaining, and so forth to BCT. And I thank you all for listening. Yes, as Maria and I, we do have our own brand of good-natured bantering, and it's developed over many years. And I like to say, we think we're funny even if no one else does. But other people seem to think we're funny too, so maybe we're on the right track. Now, a subject that has absolutely no humor to it whatsoever, but was brought up in the comments by Beth, is the subject of the events of September 11th. Thank you, Beth. Your comments are timely, as the Tribeca Film Festival, which is held here in New York, opened, with the showing of a movie concerning Flight 93, which was brought down mercifully by the passengers. I only say mercifully I understand it was headed for the Capitol or somewhere like that. As devastating as it hitting the Twin Towers, or the planes hitting the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. That was bad enough. So we thank the passengers of that plane for their unselfishness and their bravery, their heroism, all of the above, in losing their own lives, they saved others. So, I shall return. On September 10th, 2001, I was sitting in a park, and it was, well, not like a park, but a little plaza, and I was listening to my CD player. My favorite vocalist was on, and I was enjoying the music, but I felt a sense of melancholy, inexplicable. I just could not put my finger on what, I don't know, I couldn't tap into why I felt, I guess, sad. I had no reason to feel sad. I was enjoying my job and was looking forward, I believe, to the seminar the following day. And so I just couldn't understand it, but I just went on and, about my daily activities. And the following morning, I just had the same feeling, only stronger, completely unwarranted in my view. And I went to work. I would try to get to work at about 8:30 or so, and I did. But I sat there. I remember sitting there. I was wearing black, and I had on these black heels, I thought I was okay, but I just, this pall of sadness was just over me, and it was ridiculous. I didn't know what was happening or why this was happening. So, in any case, I will stop there. And I will say that, I remember the World Trade Centers very fondly for a couple reasons. One, when you come back from the South Ferry trip, you would see these two majestic buildings, you know, the sun, we usually did that in the evening, and the sun would be shining on them, and it was really a magnificent sight to be on this tiny boat and looking up and seeing these twin buildings. And, you know, this was what I used to do, what we used to do with our mother, was, you know, a day that we would go on the boat and, you know, and just ride to Staten Island and come back. It was a nice ride. The next time, I was much older, I believe, and it was during my job search. And I remember two instances in particular. I took the civil service test, which I did not pass, because I failed the typing portion. I was just out of transcription typing at the Jewish Guild, and I don't know how many months, maybe a few months, or between the time I was going to get my first job and the time I officially ended the program, which would have been March of, I believe, 88 to July. So during that time, you know, I made my rounds, as it were, and I was sent to the World Trade Center, and Maria went with me. And I remember sitting down because we had to, sitting down in the elevator because we had to go up to the 55th floor. And I wasn't thrilled with that. So, now the next time I was job seeking, I was actually on a job, very unhappy. So I got in touch with this Just One Break that was supposed to help people find jobs, and they sent me on a slew of interviews. Well, one of the interviews found me once again at the World Trade Center. And I remember I was to interview for a financial company, and I took a typing test, and they didn't have anything in large print, so I yanked out a copy of Barbara Streisand's words to a song that I was doing, or lyrics rather, and I copy typed that, and apparently that wasn't good enough, so I did not have to go to the 104th floor, which is where I was headed. And I was grateful, folks, believe me, because I just don't like elevators. And I certainly don't like elevators when I have to go above 20. So 55 and 104 were not, they weren't, I wasn't looking forward to it. And I will never forget the young lady who, I'm going to turn Jaws off here. The young lady who actually interviewed me initially and gave me the typing test. Everything was held down on the first floor, or on the somewhere on the concourse, I guess it would be. And it was an experience. I'm glad I failed the test. I remember her distinctly because she also guided me to the train. I had no clue. I mean, I knew how to get there. And one of the things I used to do was, when you get downtown or downtown Manhattan, streets move, they turn, they shift, they're triangular, they're everything, and you really don't know where to go. So I would look up, and if I saw those two buildings, I knew I was in the right place. So, and I really didn't have anything to do with them, except peripherally, you know, hearing people maybe who worked there or something like that. I know they had a concert series there, and I always would say to Maria, well, you know, maybe we'll get there on a day that we're off or something like that. We never did. Moving ahead, jumping ahead to working at CCVIP on that September 11th day, I remember, again, having to go through... Actually, I remember crying for some reason. Just out of the blue. It was the weirdest thing. I had no clue. We were totally isolated in this building. And, in this classroom. I remember my friend Gus was there, and he was my tutor for the day, and we had six people, and we were thrilled. And in our break, you know, we were going along fairly well, and during our break, Judy comes to us, she's my manager, and she comes and she hauls us, oh, no, not hauls, but she asks us to come into her room. And Gus and I go in. We think, well, what have we done wrong? The seminar is going well. What could possibly be wrong? You know, we didn't know. Maybe she's going to tell us something about a student. What did we know? So we get there. We sit down. It's like being called into the principal's office. We're sitting there, you know. And she says, well, I don't remember exactly, but... a plane has just flown into the towers. And what do we know? We sit there, you know, totally... we're thinking, okay, a light plane, you know, one of those little charter planes, I call them, you know, the little commuter things. What do we know? So, you know, she turns on Winds, I think, which is our news station, 1010 Winds. And we hear something, and I think we were in the fog. We were in the fog of disbelief. So what do? We numbly troop back to the classroom where the six people are waiting for us, and I end the seminar. We carry on with the seminar. We don't know what's happened. Our students don't know what happened. I don't know if we told them. We might have. I don't remember. And when the seminar ended, I remember running to the phone to try to call Maria. The lines were crazy. They were just all, well, they were all screwed up. There's no way to put it. I could not get Maria directly on our line, but I was able to get our security guard, Jimmy, and Jim called Maria, and somehow we spoke, and she told me this unbelievable news, and I remember the people who were with me, and the next thing I knew, we were all sort of corralled back into our reception area, kind of milling. We didn't know what to do. There was no announcement made. We have a PA system. We said, okay, we will go out. We will leave. We will, if we don't get, I guess Judy got the word or something, but in any case, we decided to leave. And we're situated across from the armory, and I walked out with a co-worker, a colleague, and she said, wow, the men are all in the fatigues, and they have guns. I could not see the guns. And, hi, Maria? Yeah. Okay. I'm going to stop there, actually, because I've said a lot. And when we come back, I'm hoping that I can get Maria to tell her side, and I will continue with my side, and we will go on from there. Okay, well, I was at, I guess, leaving the building. We left the building, and I won't go on too much, because actually Maria said a lot of the stuff that I could have said, which is terrific. I will just say that I had on these shoes, and I am sorry, and to this day I keep a pair of flats in my drawer because I had to walk from, I walked from 25th to 42nd, which is really nothing, but my feet were killing me. And that brings me to the ladies, you know, who were wearing heels that day and had to walk these inordinate amounts of miles to get home, and how the shoe stores purported these amazing, I don't know whether they were giving them away, selling them or whatever, but amazing crowds getting, buying shoes, sneakers in particular. And just a few other notes. I got on a bus that actually stopped and picked people up at 42nd Street, and it was the most crowded I've ever experienced on a bus. Nobody paid. He didn't ask for anybody to pay. I think one of the weirdest things was when I was doing my usual route, so I walked to Madison, or what would be the beginning of Madison, and as I turned the corner, I heard someone hawking a postcard, and he was just saying quietly, "World Trade Center," and I thought, my God, this is the height of blasphemy, but only in New York could you get away with doing that, you know, where somebody actually tries to sell something. Here, the event is barely fresh. I mean, it's totally fresh, excuse me, and it's totally fresh, and this person is trying to hawk, you know, pictures of the World Trade Center. That went on for months, actually. And a couple of other things. One, I'm glad Maria went to work with me the following day. I was terrified. Two, either it was that night or the next night, there was something about a bomb in the Empire State Building, and I was thrilled because the dog sat down. Before that, I was a wreck. I remember shaking, like, literally, like, you know, like the proverbial leaf. I was terrified. And I remember the CUNY system being so kind to us, saying, if you can get to work the next... I'm sorry, that's not even true. We did not go to work the next day. We went to work on Thursday. No one went to work on Wednesday. And I think my friend at the time might have had to go, but her boss was really... Well, we won't talk about him. But anyway, I think what I recall was that the CUNY message was that if you were unable to get to work, you didn't have to worry about taking a sick day or any other time. So they basically just, I don't know, you know, just let us go that day. Maria talked about the buildings and how they were vacated and so forth, and that's true. We have a friend to this day who got his apartment as a result of people leaving the apartment from September 11th. And they were on the 19th. He is now on the 19th floor. No way am I going to live on the 19th floor. Anyway, if there were other things that I wanted to tell you, I just want to say that it was a terrifying experience, one I don't want to relive. But I will say I did remember something. Our manager, Judy, screams out, "We're at war!" You know? Oh, and I remember another thing. Very shortly after, on November 11th, a plane went down in a river, in the East River or somewhere around Kennedy. And, of course, there was all this speculation. Now, it turns out that that was a truly tragic accident. But I remember, again, standing in front of the television the same way I did on September 11th and just taking it all in, wondering what was happening. You know, then we had the anthrax scare, and it was, you know, it was just like one thing after the next. And it was crazy. my friend came up to spend the night with us one night. I guess she didn't want to be alone. And it was just almost a surreal time. And Maria pretty much described a lot of the things that we all heard on the TV. And, you know, we just all had to get through it. There were so many rumors, so many horrendous realities. However, in saying that, I refuse to leave anything on a negative note. I realize that what I should do is probably splice in Maria's comments before my own, as I am ending the thing. But we have all, those of us who have been able to, have moved on. And we look to the future. It has been 5 years, almost 5 years rather, and we have had the opportunity to deal with some children. And so that's what you're going to hear after Maria tells her story. And I will come back in with some other small thing. The podcast will be a little lengthy this week. I am calling it Phoenix Rising. So, stay tuned for Maria's experience.
Hello, everybody. This is Maria, and Lynette has asked me to record my impressions of what was happening or what happened or what I saw during 9/11 2001. This is a rather somber subject. But it's good to revisit things now and again. So when Lynette told me that Beth, I believe it was, asked if we would do something like that, having sort of really lived through it, being right here in New York City, I started thinking back, and I was really amazed at exactly the, you know, progression of events. And, you know, I thought about where everybody was, Lynette was, and myself. Lynette, I believe she has told you that she was at work at Baruch College. I, at the time, was working from home as a medical transcriptionist. I was working for a company that sort of farmed out outsourcing transcription, and I would call in every morning, and they would, I had a special sort of hookup, and they would download, this is not the term that they used at the time, but they would download some reports for me to transcribe. And that morning, I remember I called in around 9 o'clock. I had gotten up, you know, in my usual hour, I think about 6:30 or 7. And I was, you know, having breakfast, and I just didn't think really to turn on the TV right away. So when I called in for my work, my boss said, he was totally distraught, and he said, "I'm sorry, we're not really." Steve, his name was. "We're not doing any work today. I'm just too. I'll call back later." And he says to me, "He said to me, did you hear about the were you watching TV?" I think he said. I said, "No, I've been, you know, getting myself ready to start working." He said, "Turn on your TV. The Twin Towers." One of the towers was at the time, he said, one of the towers have been, a plane crashed into one of the towers. I said, "Oh my God." So, you know, we hung up, and I immediately turned on the television to see what was happening. And, of course, it was just sort of pandemonium. Reporters, different stations had sent their reporters to the scene. So we were getting reports from everywhere, even... Like most of the time we watch NBC, but we were getting from NBC, but we were getting reporters like ABC and some of the other radio stations also. I mean, everybody was sort of cooperating. Because at some places the communications were cut off. I don't remember exactly what stations were, but there were some stations. Well, the main antenna for the radio stations, the TV stations especially, was at one of the towers, on top of one of the towers, and it came down. So they had to scramble and try to broadcast from, you know, wherever they could. People, I just could not believe my eyes. I do have a little bit of vision, enough to be able to see, to, you know, sit up close to the TV and actually see what's going on. And it was a sight that I try to sort of forget, you know, or erase it. For the most part, from my memory, because it was just sad. The Twin Towers was something that we had become part of our skyline, and just to see, they would the cameramen would do wide shots of the skyline, and to not see that. To not have that as part of the skyline, I just can't explain it. It's just like seeing a picture of maybe where some famous landmark that any of you are familiar with, not looking at a picture and somebody saying this is Mount so and so or where whatever stood, and not seeing it there anymore. It's a real sense of loss is what we feel, you know. And so I kept watching. I was watching TV, and I saw when the second plane hit the second tower. It burst into flames. Both towers were burning, and you just heard the commotion, the cries of the people. You know, the aftermath. Well, after the towers hit, there was all sorts of speculation on where did it hit, how many people, who would be able to get out, this, that, and the other. I will have to say here that the saddest thing was when they started showing that some of the people who were at the very top of the building, the 71st floor or so, way up above the... where the plane hit, above the point of impact, the people just knew. I guess they just felt there was no way out for them, and they started. They would call their family and closest relatives, whoever they could reach, if they were able to call out, because some people weren't able to do that, but they would. They were calling people, and then they would jump, and they actually showed people jumping out of the windows and come. And then, you know, you would hear the thud on the tarmac, on the plaza, like that. It was like, oh my Lord. sometimes there were sometimes you didn't really know if it was people or debris, because a lot of debris and glass was flying everywhere. Another thing that really impacted upon me was that quite a few people went up. They it was too hot where they were. It was too hot to go down to get out. Of course, you know, immediately once there's a fire in the building, you're not allowed. You know, the elevators are cut off. So they decided to go up to the roof and call for help there, and they were calling. They were asking, please send helicopters to pick us up. And everybody at first was pretty hopeful that this would be able to be done, and you know, they could lift off at least some of the people. But that was not possible, because the flames were so intense, the helicopters could not get close enough to pick them up. So they either they perished either by jumping or by hanging on and, you know, staying up there until the end. And finally, I don't remember the exact time, but I saw the first tower fall, and then thereafter, about, I don't know, maybe it was a half hour or close to an hour, the second tower fell, and that was just horrendous. You know, there really aren't words to describe what was going on, and the masses of people running, scattering, and there was dust and debris everywhere. I remember that one reporter as reporters do, they try to get as close to the incident and so they can see for themselves what's happening. And this particular reporter was fairly close, and when the towers collapsed, he ran with everybody else and was still transmitting from under a car or something like that, or a truck. I think he went under a truck, him and some other gentlemen. And the one thing, positive thing, not about the accident itself, but about the behavior of the people, was that everybody in that moment pulled together. And there were people helping people. Many people risked and lost their lives helping others. There was one priest who was, I forget his name at the moment, but he helped many people to get out. And at the last minute, I think he had a heart attack and passed away on the at the scene. Right, administering last rites to a victim.
And I just wanted to say, had it been an accident, we could have understood. But
exactly. No. If it had been a plane had gone, you know, lost it, of course. Or run out of fuel, which. It's okay, a little bit, it happens, but it's a little bit hard to believe, because planes don't usually go over in that particular area. So, but to know that these people deliberately ran in, or flew into all three buildings. And the thing is, not only did those buildings suffer, but several surrounding buildings were devastated. The Deutsche Bank. One, I guess their securities company or financial corporation or something. I can't remember what's the name of that. Not they all there because they're Cantor Fitzgerald. Their offices were in one of the towers, and they lost practically everybody. Everybody who was in, who had gone in early and who was in the building at that time, all perished. Yeah, a good 90 to 95% of those people. I mean, they were totally. And then, you know, to see later on in news reports, the owners, the man who owned Cantor Fitzgerald or who ran it, the president, he was in tears. It was a terrible experience to, you know, to get through, to have lived through for everybody, even those of us who were in New York, but sort of on the periphery, but still close enough to. Well, we live a good,
miles.
I don't know, quite a few miles away from it, and the scent. The smell, I guess this isn't even scent. This is the smell of the burning metal. It was like an acrid smell. Reached all the way up here, you know. And that day there was, all we did was watch TV. I couldn't get a hold of Lynette because the lines were down for a while. Verizon, which is our main carrier here in New York, their lines were down. And I was frantic because I didn't know what was happening. She works not exactly in that area, but I think, you know, you start thinking all kinds of things. You know, what if they're attacking? Because, you know, they kept saying for weeks after, Penn Station is next, or the Empire State Building is next, or, you know, there were all kinds of rumors flying around, and I was totally panicked. Finally, I think one of our security men called me and told me that she was trying to call, and then I don't remember whether I called her or she called me, or somehow we finally, and the poor girl had to walk. Did you walk home today?
Thankfully, I walked to 42nd.
To 42nd. Okay. But there were those who walked for miles, and the people who worked there but had to get like to Queens, or they had to, and Brooklyn, they had to walk across Brooklyn Bridge. And I mean, you could see that they just showed them the numbers and masses of people walking across, I mean, along the highway trying to get home. Some people, it took them, you know, close to 8 or more hours to get home because it totally disrupted our transportation system. Yeah. There was none going in because no buses were allowed to go there. And, what else can I say? The we have a subway station that feeds right off into it. Did anyway at the time, the PATH train, and one of the regular New York City transit would people could get off one of the towers and go up and, you know, get to work that way. Well. And there were shops, people who owned shops in that area where the subway's underground. And they were totally, you know, we lost a good amount of a whole fire department. The closest, because they were the closest, and they reported first, and they were going up. The firemen would go up into the burning buildings to try and save people, and, you know, quite a few of them passed away as one of the towers collapsed. They were on the stairs. The other thing I just wanted to say was that the day after my boss was so upset. There was still no work going on, and I went to work with Lynette, and all we could see that she lives right near, she works right near the armory, and there were people, because people were posting pictures and notes, and they were all over the armory. They had set up a headquarters there, and people were asking, have you seen so-and-so? And there was a picture of the person, and flowers commemorating, people, different people's death, because they knew. It had become a whole block shrine, practically, a block square. And there were guardsmen, for weeks, there were guardsmen with rifles and everything walking around. It's taken a long time to get over that. They have just now, I heard not too long ago, broken ground on a new building. Yes, a new complex, I guess it would be. I think it's going to be a couple of, not as many towers that there used to be, but not everybody is in agreement, seldom there is complete agreement on what gets
anything
built.
Here.
Yeah, because a lot of the victims' families aren't in agreement with towers being built over their loved ones'
graves,
or yeah, and then there are also those who have never been recovered, and they feel that once those towers go up, there will never be a chance for that, you know. So, this is about it from my telling of it. I just to think of it, Beth, just to think of it stirs up a lot of emotion, and I'll just say that it took weeks for us not to wake up and think of, that would be one of our first thoughts in the morning, you know, is something else going to happen? Because like, as I said before, there were rumors of people bombing or pulling some sort of stunt like this in the subways, and we have a huge subway system, you know, and all of our bigger, the stock exchange, the Empire State Building, everywhere, you know, they were, yeah, and all of a sudden, somebody would call in, because you always have these pranksters, or I don't know what they are, people, sick people is what they are, and they would call in these threats or these rumors, oh, someone, there is such and such building, there is going to be bombed at such and such, you know, and all of a sudden, we'd be back in it, because traffic would be diverted, the buses would be, the routes would be changed, and we were like in a state of alarm, of alertness and alarm for quite a long time. We grew to sort of live with this code orange and code yellow, and because we went through so many codes that it was really, really very scary, and it took a long time for us to sort of become not accustomed, yeah, as normal as we can, you know. And, you know, New Yorkers, in closing, I'll just say that New Yorkers are fairly plucky. We just keep on ticking, like that commercial, like Timex watches, you know. We get bounced and dropped and you know, pushed around, but in the end, I think we have shown that we have become, I think we always were, but we always seem to have had this reputation of New Yorkers being not caring and harsh and hard, and I think it showed that In the final analysis, a lot of us, I mean, everyone seemed to pull together, help each other. You saw people, especially that day, you saw people whole, like some older people or what, people who were really tired and couldn't make it, and didn't seem like they could make it. People were holding them up as they walked along. People were sharing whatever they had. People were bringing food where it was needed. And that, you know, sort of helped uplift our spirit. And I will close. I will just say goodbye for now. And I may, if I think of something,
okay,
I'll come back and...
Okay, cool. See how once you get going. Yeah, now you have to stand up. Oh, of course, because that was past 12 minutes. No, that's okay. Okay, so... Ooh, okay. I thank Maria because... For her experience, for sharing her experience. It's, we really haven't spoken of that time in a long time. And I think we think about it, but only, you know, each year on the anniversary, of course. But we haven't given it a lot of weight, and we don't sit there, or we haven't sat there and rehashed all of the events and so forth. But with the advent of the movie and with Beth asking, you know, you wonder, well, what should I do for the podcast? And I really try to have something each week, and it's turned out that I do. It seemed apropos or appropriate or the time to do it. So now, as I said before Maria's experience, we, in the past 2 weeks, have had the opportunity to interact with our future. Our future are, or is, I don't know anymore, our children. And they are full of life, they are inquisitive, they are lovely. And I have some clips of two schools. The first school, I cannot remember the name, but these young people want to start a choral program, actually. Right now, some are learning recorder. They know very little, if anything, about the mechanics of music, and how blind people do music and all of that. And so, you know, it was our pleasure, really, to introduce them to JAWS and Zoom Text and things like that, and, well, assistive technology, I should say. And then they sang. So the next thing you will hear, if I can find it, and I will, is the school. There were about 11, plus various chaperones, singing an African song. And I'll just let Dahlia take it away.
I thought this tune would be fun for us to sing. It's an African tune, and it's actually kind of good that we have more women, no offense, than men, because this is a song that South African women sang to kind of get in touch with their maternal ancestors, and it means our mothers and grandmothers used to pray, and that's what it means. Our mothers and grandmothers used to pray. And the words, it looks intimidating, but it's not so bad, and it just keeps repeating.
Oh,
Mama Bakudala.
Say that.
Oh, Mama Bakudala.
Babe Tandaza. Babe Tandaza.
That's it. Let's say the whole line.
Oh, Mama Bakudala. Babe Tandaza.
One more time.
Oh, Mama Bakudala. Babe Tandaza.
Mama is quick.
Oh, mabakudala. Try it and go.
Oh, mabakudala babe tandaza.
And then you just repeat that second part. Babe tandaza, babe tandaza, babe tandaza, babe tandaza.
And let's just sing it. One, two, here we go. Oh, mabakudala.
Hi, this is Maria again, and I'm back to give you a short introduction of our collaboration with PS79. The they we have a sort of an exchange going on, in which every year the kids make money by holding a what do they call carnival in October, and they charge for different things and they raise money to towards giving us, well, they give us the money towards towards the purchase of print music, which can then be changed into accessible format, either large print, braille, or taped, recorded material for our ensembles, our various classes, etc. And then, so what happens is that once this carnival takes place and they give us the money, and then we buy the material, the ensembles, the choral ensemble, vocal ensemble, we learn this, you know, we have different programs. You've already probably heard the one that we did for the Met, or at least clips of it. And we prepare a little program. First, they come to us, and then to see the lighthouse and what the lighthouse is all about, and what we do there. And then the following week or so, usually, we go to the school where we sing a short program, and they sing a program of their own that they have rehearsed, and then many times they sing with us. We sing together. Their school is very, very, very interested. I mean, this whole exchange has totally blossomed. It started with just the fourth grade, and now has blossomed into, finally, where the entire school takes part in the celebrations. Lynette just got email. Then the other thing is, so they came anyway. So they came this past Friday, and we formed into three separate groups after meeting on the fourth floor, you know, and getting everybody together and explaining what was going to be done. We formed into three separate groups. I led one group, and our supervisor, our boss, actually, my boss, Leslie Jones, she's the director of the music school, she led another group, and our assistant director led the third group. And my group went from the fourth floor up to the eighth floor. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to record it. I tried to, but I hadn't realized that my recorder was
full of podcasts from BCT and music.
Exactly. I thought I had more space and that I had erased enough to cover, you know, so that I could record this time, but apparently I hadn't. And I have to just tell you what happened. We went up to the eighth floor, which is our library floor, and where the librarian showed us, and we have a reading department. She showed them, the children, where the reading takes place. She showed them we have CCTVs up there for those who prefer to do their own reading. Then they saw the reading edge. And she explained and showed them how that worked. After that, also we had a gentleman, he's one of the directors. He had his guide dog, and he took them to one area and explained to them how guide dogs are trained and how they work and all kinds of things about the guide dogs. Then we went down to the seventh floor, which is the floor where we have our independent living classes, and the young the woman there, her name is Naomi, I think it's Campbell, she sat the children around the table, and she showed them. They were totally immersed in all of this. I have to interject that they totally engaged. These 9 and 10 year olds were really, I guess, because also they had been briefed you know, they had been talking about this since October with their teacher. So they were totally psyched. So anyway, Naomi sat them around the table and she explained about the how people who with visual impairments have different things that they use to make it possible for them to cook and do other things. She showed them the dots that are placed on the dials of the stove or the microwave or whatever, so that we can tell, you know, to where to turn the how far to turn the dial if we need it, when we need to cook. She showed them this I think it's called Say When. And she had a couple of them and when she had a couple of them pour a glass of water, and they loved that. One or two little spills, but not bad. And then she showed them showed them the writing guides and had them try to, they had blindfolds, and she had them write their names with blindfolds on. Some of them did better than others, but they were totally, in fact, we could hardly keep them quiet, or get them out of the class. I was late coming down because they just were too involved in what they were doing. And then finally we came down to the fourth floor, and we met there. And then I'll let Lynette tell you about the ending, that part.
Did you tell them a little bit about the beginning and how they met, since you were going to tell them all that? Okay. Did you tell them how they met in the classroom and stuff? Okay. So then they came to the fourth floor, and I'll keep it as brief as I can. I don't know why. But... And I showed them Zoom text and JAWS, and they were just, you know, amazed. And one of our colleagues, John, showed them how to create Braille music. And we embossed some music for them, and they were thrilled. So I'm going to, next thing you'll hear is some short clips from that visit.
Bobby's about your age.
Rocco.
Big Rocco.
Glenn.
Sandy.
Grandma. Grandpa.
And Grandpa. Okay, so which voice would you like to use?
Grandpa.
Really? Excellent.
Grandpa ate a lead.
All right, well, here we go.
Grandpa.
All right.
It sounds weird.
That whole of you was
he does, doesn't he? Sounds like someone like that.
What could I tell you?
Violin.
Enter.
Oh no. You have to go to here.
All days. Enter.
Leaving menus. Hear dialogue.
We can automatically braille.
Get out of here first. You're on the hear screen yet.
Oh, escape.
Slur.
Okay, thank you. So,
all deaf.
Menu, the book, violin.
G for
G.
Weaving menus, slur.
And,
all of these equipment that you see, the computers, do you see the tower over there?
Yeah, it's complicated.
That's the braille printer.
Escape.
It's called an embossing.
Warning, no double bar at end.
Good escape. Tap.
Good feel intermediate dialogue. Fix title button.
Tap.
Fix part names button.
Tap.
Print report button.
Tap.
Process button.
Alt-P. Process is the one we want.
Space.
Braille destination. Braille editor.
We wanted to go to the embosser. Actually, if we wanted to see what the braille looks like,
that's what it's going to look like.
That's what it's going to look like. It'll get embossed, and then we'll actually do it. Come out of here.
Hold that four. Shift tab.
Embosser button.
You know how long it is?
No, it's very short. 20 measures. It'll take one page.
Space.
Lime script actor. Lime. The book. Violin. Lim. Page 1 of 2. This document.
There it goes.
There they are.
You guys. Wait till it comes out at the bottom.
No,
and leave. Then you can get it.
Everybody leaves, and I'm still here.
Can I also say goodbye to this?
Maybe you should
pick up. C/Y mouse part. Folder view list view. The book. Violin. Win.
5 of 6.
That's it.
Whoa.
And I could write people's name. Somebody yell out one of your names.
Justin.
Name.
Right.
Justin. Right. B-R-I-C-E.
B-R-A-I-S.
Oh, okay, so first we don't have capital letters, so we put a dot 6
in front of the first letter. So dot six for the capital, then B R A I S. And this would be your name. Do you want to come up and see it?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. Or feel it.
One more name. Okay. Guys. Michelle would be. Okay, I'm going to tell you something else. Braille takes up a lot of space, so we kind of cut it down some into what we call grade two, which means that we combine letters. So it'll be capital, the dot six, M, which is 1, 3, and 4, I, which is dots 2 and 4. Now, the C and the H are going to be combined into one sign, which is the dot 1 and dot 6, where CH sign, and then E, which is 1 and 5, L is 1, 2, 3. We'll have two of those. And one more E, which is dot 1 and dot 5.
Okay. Cool.
And that is Michelle. You want to come see your name, Michelle?
One person is going to wear a blindfold, and the other person is going to be the guide. How about you be the guide, and how about you have your blindfold?
Oh, cool.
So we're going to stay right here. Which is your good side do you want to
be on? Right side.
You're going to be on his right side. Okay. Now you're going to stand just a little bit behind. You're going to grab onto it. Right. You're going to keep it close somewhat to your body so she can feel. Okay? And I want you to walk over to Dahlia. Okay.
Scary. Yeah.
Love you,
made it. Yeah. I have requested a friend create or compose some music to which I can end the podcast. So until I get that music, I am ending without music. There are, of course, several ways in which you can contact us. Some popular ways are, 1, through the BCT email list. 2, you can go to the blog, I might as well say the blog page. And that's superlyn.libsyn.com. You can subscribe to our Malyn Slice of Life podcast with superlyn.libsyn.com/RSS. Just drop that into your juice with control N and or your accessible podcatcher. You can email me at superlyn@earthlink.net. I'd like to thank Maria for her contributions today. It was a pleasure to have her input. Believe me, I've been begging and pleading for months, and today was the day. So, as she says, she has to be, I guess the spirit moved her to speak. So, for that, I am truly grateful. The music was, of course, provided by Magnatune. Prospects was the theme under the comments, and I'm not sure if the piece itself is called Spherica, but I know the album is called Spherica. It's in the New Age section under in Magnatune, and I think it's from, I guess the artist is capital D, capital A, capital C, dash Crowell or Crowell, C-R-O-W-E-L-L. In any case, it's at magnatune.com. So, if I have forgotten anything or anyone, please forgive me. I meant no harm. I simply want everyone... by the way, let us not forget the now-used K7 line. 206-600-6259. That's
206-600-6259. Thank you so much. We love it. We need it. We live for feedback. All right? When we don't get it, we say, all right, they're out there in the ether listening. We just don't know who they are. So, thank you so much. Maria calls me Sarah. Thank you for sticking through this rather lengthy podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it and that it has been, if nothing else, entertaining and thought-provoking. Take care of yourselves, each other, and have a peaceful week. Until we meet again, you, Lynette, and possibly Maria, on the Malin Slice of Life podcast.